Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. Hello to you, the listener. I'm Gail Seiler, your host for today. Thanks for tuning in. I want to remind our listeners that we just recently held our semi-annual KHOI membership drive. However, we are still asking you to consider becoming a member of KHOI and making an end-of-year tax-deductible contribution to the station. Why not weigh all that Local Talk and KHOI provide to you and the community and make a timely and generous investment in the station? Basic membership is $55, but you can donate any amount. The easiest way to donate is to go to the website, khoifm.org, and click the donate button on the left-hand side. It is quick and secure. Once you do that, you can proudly say you are part of the KHOI family. Tuning to the weather, or turning to the weather, sadly, at least in my opinion, we did not have a white Christmas or any snow over the past week. But I wanted to find some snow and do some cross-country skiing while my daughter was visiting. So we drove up into Minnesota. We went to a place over an hour north of Duluth, Minnesota, before we found some snow for cross-country skiing. But we had a wonderful day of cross-country skiing on fresh snow with a good base. But when we returned to Iowa, I found myself wishing that all this rain the past few days here in Ames had been snow. I know I'm probably the only one in the town who was wishing that. Our engineer is laughing at me. But this morning, we have a little sprinkle. Today, we will have a high of 30 and rain mixed with a bit of snow, it sounds like. Then it will turn colder tomorrow with a high of only 23. On Sunday, the temperature will warm again to near 40, and it will be sunny. So we'll have some nice weather to be outside for a walk, at least on Sunday. In the latter part of today's show, Ames Progressive Alliance will be with us for their monthly segment, and we'll hear what they've been up to. But first, let's get started with Dennis Hart with the Friday News Roundup.
Hi, Gail, and hello, everyone. It is great to be here on this last Friday of the year. And yes, I'm wondering, as you perhaps are, how in the world time went so fast this past year? Well, it did, and here we are. So let's begin our summary the way we usually do, by taking a look back at what made news in last Saturday's Ames Tribune. One of the stories was that an appeals court had ordered a correction in the sentence in a Story County case. The Iowa Court of Appeals decided that a Story County judge failed to include participation in a batterer's treatment program when he sentenced a man on several charges, including domestic abuse assault. 50-year-old George James Jackson had pleaded guilty to several counts, but when he was sentenced, the judge did not order him to take part in a batterer's education program as required by state law. So the appeals court ordered the case back to district court to correct Jackson's sentence. Last Saturday's Trib also reported that the Iowa Public Information Board broke state open meetings law, which it is charged with enforcing, when it voted on matters discussed only in closed session. The investigation into the Public Information Board was sparked by what happened at a board meeting last year when it went into closed session to talk about a case involving two law enforcement agencies refusing to release information about a 2015 fatal shooting by a police officer in Burlington. Following that closed session, the board voted unanimously to proceed in accordance with what members had talked about in that private meeting without describing for the public what happened. Yes, it's a complex story, and you can get more details in last Saturday's Tribune. Last Saturday's paper also had word that the Roland Story Middle School held its 18th annual student-run Senior Citizen Appreciation Lunch. More than 250 people attended the event inside the middle school's gymnasium. Seventh graders made the decorations, while eighth graders set up the tables and chairs. Several student performing arts groups provided entertainment during the lunch. And Saturday's Tribune also reported that Bethany Lutheran Daycare in McCallsburg had received several funding gifts before Christmas, including a $6,000 grant from the Story County Community Foundation and an $1,800 endowment gift from the city of McCallsburg. The money will be used to purchase software for better record keeping, for making repairs to the daycare's floors, and to help with training. Sunday's Trib reported that the Iowa State University Police Department had created a mental health advocate position. It will provide mental health-related services for law enforcement calls and act as a liaison between the police department and mental health services. Police Chief Michael Newton said about 30% of the university's officers have extensive training in crisis intervention, but not all officers are trained for mental health calls for services. Nearly 50 people have applied for the new position, and the university PD is taking as much time as necessary to make sure the right person is hired. Also Sunday, the Trib reported that one of Story County's most respected doctors returned to Central Iowa this past year. Dr. Timothy Leeds left 3 years ago after spending 23 years at the Doran Clinic in Ames, where he had delivered about 4,000 babies. He and his wife moved to Texas, then got homesick for Iowa. So now they've come back, and this time Dr. Leeds is working at Story Medical Clinic in the Story County Medical Center in Nevada. Sunday's paper also had a long feature story about the new pastor at St. John's by the Campus Episcopal Church in Ames. The Reverend Kim Turner Baker began work leading the congregation this past August and was installed as its pastor during a ceremony last month. She was born in Des Moines and lived there for the first 8 years of her life. But her ties to Central Iowa go back to the early 1900s, when her great-uncle and grandfather were among the first blacks to graduate from Iowa State University. It's a long takeout on the journey she took from an all-girls Catholic high school in Detroit to the University of Michigan, to Cleveland, to Texas, and to other places before she arrived in Ames. You can read all about it in Sunday's Tribune. And you can also read about the new auction house that's opened in downtown Story City. Kyle and Jennifer Miller told the Trib they want their place at 521 Broad Street to be a spot for community residents to gather. They've started a community coffee club, they have a community game room, and they offer food and refreshments during their auctions. Their place in Story City is called Miller's Auctioneer Services. The Trib is not published on Mondays. Tuesday's paper, Christmas Days, had a heartwarming feature story about a family in Nevada that has overcome the loss of their daughter to find new meaning in their lives through the birth of another child. Yes, it's a story appropriate for the holiday season, and it's in the Christmas Day Tribune. That same edition also reported that a group called Martha's House of Hope soon will offer faith-based support for expectant mothers in need in Story County. The house was founded by three women who had an idea to start a home after working with women with unplanned pregnancies in a charitable capacity for years. The founders want to hire an executive director and then start providing a place for expectant moms to stay. Another Christmas Day story reported that Story County has been ranked the fourth most giving among Iowa's 99 counties, based on a charitable giving study. Story County follows Sioux, Dallas, and Warren counties. They were ranked based on how much people donated as a percentage of their net income and the proportion of people in a given county who made charitable contributions. And Tuesday's paper also had a story about a rescued dog who had run across Ames for 20 hours and who was now waiting for a new home. Lila is a 3-year-old pit bull mix who was caught in October after running loose in Ames for those 20 hours. She was finally rescued by an Iowa State University veterinary medicine student and put on a lost animal list at the Ames Animal Shelter. Her journey around Ames was shared on Facebook, but her previous owner was never found. So Lila was put up for adoption, and she was still there as of Christmas Day. Wednesday's Tribune had a long takeout on how Iowa universities, including Iowa State, are evolving in the wake of rule changes involving sexual misconduct allegations on campuses. Changes being proposed to federal regulations would mandate that university campuses address sexual misconduct in a particular way. Those proposed changes would limit college and university liability for investigating sexual misconduct claims and increase the rights of defendants, including giving them the ability to cross-examine their accusers. Iowa State University has already changed its policies and procedures. The ISU policy acknowledges that both accusers and the accused are entitled to information on resources, allegations, and the status of a case or investigation. Both are entitled to take part in the disciplinary process and to know the results of their case. Wednesday's Tribune also reported that the Ames Public Library planned to unveil new additions to its donor wall on Thursday, yesterday. The wall outside the library's Farwell T. Brown Auditorium holds numerous plaques that acknowledge the names of donors who supported the renovation of the library. A new donor wall policy will let other donors be honored. Donations to the library will be used to support the library's programming, including services, classes, and events. Those donations will also support the library's summer program that feeds kids and teens for lunch. Wednesday's paper also reported on two Nevada girls who donated handmade teddy bears to Nevada's public safety department. 11-year-old Libby Thomas and Ella Haley made 30 teddy bears as a holiday gift to the Nevada Public Safety Department, some of which will be put into officers' cars to have when situations arise where children they encounter might need to be comforted with something. The girls also plan to deliver bears to two other places, including ChildServe and the Ronald McDonald House in the greater Des Moines area. And one more note. Now that Christmas is over, you might be wondering about how to get rid of your Christmas tree. Wednesday's Trib had an answer on the front page. The City of Ames will provide a free Christmas tree disposal service through the end of January. Trees can be disposed of at the Parks and Recreation Maintenance Building at 700 East 13th Street. Trees can be dropped off during daylight hours. They will be recycled into mulch, which will then be used in the city's parks. And that mulch itself will also be available to residents. The Parks and Rec Maintenance Building will be marked with a sign to direct residents. One note of caution, if you do dispose of your tree that way, the city would like you to remove the tree stand, the tinsel, and yes, all the ornaments before you drop it off. Thursday's trip, yesterday's, had a long takeout on the controversial Dakota Access Pipeline, which is transporting oil from North Dakota through South Dakota and 18 counties in Iowa to Illinois. The nearly 1,200-mile pipeline has been in operation for about 18 months. Thursday's story details the problems the pipeline has caused some Story County farmers, including damaged land that has resulted in diminished crop yields, erosion, and flooding. Some landowners have sued Dakota Access and the Iowa Utilities Board, contending the pipeline is trespassing on their land because the Utilities Board should not have granted eminent domain. The state Supreme Court has heard arguments on the issue and has yet to rule. It's an important story, and it's in yesterday's Tribune. Also yesterday, the Trib reported that trial has been set for a Story County man who pleaded not guilty to threatening to kill another man. Trial for 19-year-old Alexander Raul Hernandez is scheduled to begin February 19th. He could face up to 5 years in prison. Yesterday's paper also had a story about a Nevada family whose home was damaged during a fire last month. They're now living in a townhouse, but they hope they can rebuild their former home. They lost their family dog in the blaze and plan to get another one once their situation gets more fully resolved. And one more note from yesterday's Trib, a heartwarming holiday story about a Slater family that started going Christmas caroling 9 years ago, and they've kept at it ever since. This past holiday season, 16 people, including neighbors and friends, joined the walking sing-along in Slater. Along the way, they shared home-baked cookies with the people they sang to. It's a feel-good story, and it's a good read in yesterday's paper. And there you have it, your summary of this past week's news from the pages of the Ames Tribune. I'm Dennis Hart, and I'll be right back here on Monday, New Year's Eve, with a look at what made news around the state of Iowa this last full week of the year 2018. In the meantime, Gail, I hope you and everyone listening have a safe and healthy weekend.
Come on, celebrate and rejoice. Spreading unity in our families and communities. Because a legacy makes us so strong. Yeah, yeah. So let us come together to celebrate this season of Kwanzaa. Reflect upon our past, we've come so far. Remembering all of those who came before us on Kwanzaa. From Rosa to Malcolm to Dr. King and Turner. Yeah. From Du Bois to Yaa Ashantiwa. We honor you on Kwanzaa. economic opportunity. Yeah, purpose is what we need, and creativity.
That was a Kwanzaa song by Lovely Hoffman. Kwanzaa is a celebration held in the United States and in other nations of the African diaspora in the Americas. Kwanzaa lasts a week from December 26th to January 1st, so it is going on now. The celebration honors African heritage within African American culture, and so we say Happy Kwanzaa to those who are celebrating it. This past semester, I taught a course at ISU called Social Justice Education. It is a course for master's students who are obtaining their certification to teach secondary grades. For example, the students in the course are becoming middle school or high school science or math teachers. We delve into understanding systems of oppression that operate in society and the role that education plays in reproducing and continuing those injustices along racial, ethnic, and other lines. And the students also learn about how they, as future teachers, can interrupt the institutional structures that marginalize certain groups. One of the goals of the course is to recognize that all of us have a limited worldview, which is based on our own experiences. So if we want to move beyond our biases and assumptions about people, we should work to expand our worldview, move outside our cultural bubble, as we call it in the course. One of the ways the students did that this past semester was to listen to at least 5 episodes of a podcast that would give them the perspective of a group that they were unfamiliar with. Students listened to podcasts with perspectives of people identifying as LGBTQ, people who are Muslim, Native American, single mothers, and others. One of the most popular podcast series that some students chose was called Ear Hustle. It's a podcast made by inmates at San Quentin Prison in California, and it is fantastic. It gives you a completely new perspective on life among men incarcerated in that prison, as well as their lives before and after prison. We highly recommend that podcast to others. It's called Ear Hustle. But after listening to their selected podcast, the students had an assignment in which they chose a social justice issue to investigate and interviewed one or more people about that issue. They then produced their own podcast or radio story. Today we are going to hear one of the radio stories produced by a student in this course. We will hear a segment called Loving the Enemy, written and produced by Sam Patterson.
A quick note before we begin. There are references to war and bombings that may not be suitable for all listeners. Recently, I've been wondering about my grandma's story, my dad's mom. She is Japanese and lived in Japan during World War II. After the war, she married an American soldier. I really wanted to know what her family thought of her relationship. Did they approve of my grandpa? Did they trust him? To get the answer, I sat down with my grandma at my aunt's house on Thanksgiving.
So you have to question to me,
mm-hmm.
So I have to answer.
Yes. She told me about her life, about living in Japan during World War II, and meeting my American grandpa. She also told me about becoming a citizen of the United States. We're sitting in a room upstairs. It's empty, except for a dresser and a couch. My cousin's kids are playing in the hallway. She sits on the floor cross-legged, a small Japanese woman with short brown curled hair, and a tissue in one hand. Kimio Sakai was born in Ashikaga, Japan. Ashikaga is a city an hour and a half north of Tokyo. She was born in Showa 7. This is the Japanese date for 1932. The dates are based on the emperor at the time and how many years he was into his reign.
And I was 11 years old, United States and Japan.
Japan entered World War II December 7, 1941, with the attack on Pearl Harbor. My grandma was actually 9 years old at the time.
It's very bad war. Yeah. It's a bomb is all over. One more day, still it's the war is not finished. I'm not here.
She started telling me what she remembers from that time in her life. She remembers how her house changed, how her siblings were sent off to help war efforts, and about her time in school.
I can see the sky. It's an American airplane bomb. My father put it in every window, black paper, because B-29, that the United States is a bomb, it's an airplane. They can see the light come out. And my father, they were up front of my yard. It's more like a cave, maybe 7 feet deep, and, you know, important paper, you know, put inside. That time I was school, yeah. And every time it's a warning, signs come out. We have to run safety place, you know, like tornado.
She then told me about what happened to her older siblings during the war. Her older sister was sent to a factory. She worked with other high schoolers building kamikaze planes. These were suicide planes filled with explosives. Young pilots volunteered for these missions to bring honor to their family and emperor. Her older brother was sent to join the Japanese army and was one of the more than 500,000 Japanese to be imprisoned in the Soviet Union following the war. My dad and grandma say he hated Americans until the day he died. In 1957, my grandma meets her husband in Japan. He happens to be American. He was serving the United States military and was stationed in Japan.
And my husband, that's American, okay, GI. He was military, it's a policeman. He always patrol, you know. So he always stopped to bring for me, he buys some chocolate or cigarette.
She said she didn't know any English at the time, and my grandpa only knew a little Japanese. But the language barrier didn't seem to bother her.
He come pick me up. We went to movie theater.
My grandma's parents and older brother did not approve of her relationship with an American. She said she stopped talking to her parents until she had her first child in 1961.
And we got married, it's 1959, December 23rd. American Embassy, it's a secretary tell me it's not easy.
Because my grandma was a Japanese citizen and my grandpa was an American citizen, she had to have many background checks. She said it took about 6 months to finally get married.
So they give me the front book. All American, you know, it's when it go back to the United States and some people don't like it in other country people.
Over the next 14 years, my grandpa was still serving in the Air Force. Two of his assignments were in Korea and Vietnam. In order to be closer to her husband, my grandma moved back and forth between America and Japan. They had three children together. Two girls in 1961 and my dad in 1967. Her children were born on U.S. military bases and were granted dual citizenship in the United States and Japan. In 1973, my grandma and her family moved back to America for the final time. This was the year my grandpa retired from the Air Force. Since then, my grandma has only been back to Japan two separate times. Because my grandma was going to live in America with her family, she decided to become a citizen of the United States.
So I have to stay a Japanese citizen, but I have three kids. I have to take American citizen. I have to study. It's all American Constitution. Big, it's courthouse. One big table, one judge, and he gave me quite a question. It's not easy. How many Supreme Court? It's one state. How many senator? It's governor. My husband paid $50 too. I got the American citizen. So I'm American citizen since 1987.
My grandma keeps a part of Japan with her in her home. When you look around, you're greeted by a papa-san chair, Japanese bells, a handmade geisha doll, and an oil painting created by her older brother. She is proud to be a Japanese woman. After talking with my grandma, I realized the story I was looking for was not the story I wanted to tell. It's been 2 weeks, and I am still thinking about my great uncle. My grandma's older brother, who served his country in the deadliest war. He fought for his people and protected their safety. He also despised Americans. Who could blame him? His country, his people, his family, they were attacked, murdered, bombed, and interned. During World War II, the United States dropped more than 150,000 tons of bombs on Japan. Over 300,000 people were killed as a result. A seed of distrust was planted during World War II and only grew throughout the years. The country who stole his sense of safety was generalized to its people. That seed grew and flourished into a prejudice, a hatred for all Americans. How many people have prejudices rooted in this same feeling? A dislike, fear, or avoidance of people who we think threaten our safety. Whether it's a prejudice of a particular gender, race, nationality, or even a group of people and their children trying to seek asylum. We as humans want to protect ourselves, our families, our country. Anyone who has the potential to make us feel unsafe becomes the enemy. It's in our programming. We want to protect ourselves from the enemy, and we justify our prejudices as protecting our own, keeping ourselves and our children safe. And what do we gain from avoidance, ignorance, or hatred? A feeling of safety, a better night's sleep. But more importantly, what do we lose? A friend, a different perspective, an appreciation for another's safety? I think we can all agree the key to happiness is not hatred or ignorance. Dare to do something that challenges a prejudice you have. Hear someone else's story, find a new perspective, expand your social circle. Who knows? You might feel safer knowing everyone else is just trying to find their own happiness.
That was Samantha Patterson interviewing her grandmother as part of an ISU course assignment. Sam is becoming a secondary math teacher. Throughout the course at ISU, the students realized that there is so much more to being a teacher than just the content that you teach. Sam's efforts on this assignment show that as a math teacher, she will be tuned into her students' identities and cultural experiences, as well as their mathematical understandings. Sam also said that she greatly valued the opportunity to interview her grandmother and record her voice and her story. She said she was thankful that now she will have this recording long after her grandmother is gone. You're listening to Local Talk on KHOI. And we now have folks from the Ames Progressive Alliance in the studio with us for their monthly segment.
My name's Carolyn Myers, and I'm one of the members of the Ames Progressive Alliance. And I'm here this morning with three other members. Unfortunately, Ann Kinsel was unable to make it this morning. But I'm also here with Chad Watkins, Matthew Goodman, and Betty Baird. All have played a role within APA over the last few years in various ways. I'll start the segment off talking a little bit more about Ann's role, because she was very integral in that. What she told me was that in 2013, she ran for city council at large, and she lost by a lot less votes than she thought she would. So she figured out that maybe we have a more progressive sentiment within the city of Ames than she originally thought we did. So she and another member had discussed maybe how can we get people more involved in local elections, how do we find candidates for local elections, and find more of the passion that we can motivate voters to be more involved with local elections. So I'd like to talk to Matthew and Betty because they've been one of the longer members of APA, to discuss how they were involved, what some of the projects they've worked on in the past, and one of the things that they think how our future is going.
My name's Betty Baird, and I have been involved in Ames Progressive Alliance starting in around 15. I don't have all the dates. But one of the things that I was very interested in is solar. I'm very concerned and interested in the environment and what we can do. And what I liked about the Ames Progressive Alliance is that it offered an opportunity for an individual who had a passion about something to come in and say, I want to see what I can do with this at the local level. And you can look at the environment and you can give money, but to actually be able to do something is a big deal. So one of the things that the Ames Progressive Alliance started on was community solar, and it wasn't our idea. It was an idea that was being put forward by another person, Bob Haug, within the city of Ames. He had been the director of a statewide municipal electric association, and he was encouraging the city to follow through with that. So we adopted that as really one of our first two initiatives, and this was back in 2015. Late 2015?
Let's say 2015.
Yeah, we'll go with that. And we met with him and we went from there. So that was the beginning of my involvement, and I can talk more about that later.
Sure, that sounds great.
Thank you so much for having me. So Anne, her story about how this developed, I think, is accurate. I think it all stems from this idea that there are people who care about things, and they are very busy people, and because of the way our lives are built, it's very hard to give all the things you want to give to for the things that you care about. And if there's not an organization to kind of hold the space for you when you're ready, I think it's more challenging to create an impact. So that was one big void, I believe. And there are other organizations that are local that do a good job of always holding that space for when people are ready. And there was not anything for progressives. And I just think that meant the road was always much harder. So when Ann ran, she really had to start from scratch in a different way than someone who ran. And I usually break down local politics into capital interests and quality of life interests. And so capital interests are always well-funded and they're always present. And quality of life interests kind of ebb and flow as our lives ebb and flow. So that was a frustration in that campaign. And she and Victoria Shapinski and myself and John Klaus and Jim Popkin, people who are progressive and love local politics to a nerd level.
We love wonk, nerds.
Yeah, wonk level. We wanted to build a thing to empower other people. Jim didn't want to run. I was already on the council. Ann didn't want to run again. And so it wasn't just about achieving our own personal goals. It was about building a structure to hold the space for people when they're ready. And the way we developed that idea, which was very amorphous and a living, breathing thing that changed a lot, was as people had ideas, we said, well, let's teach you about how city government works and see if we can achieve your idea. So solar was a great example of that.
Yeah, and organic is the word that I used. And I always liked that because I have been involved in a lot of organizations that were very structured. And structure is good. But I liked the fact that with the Ames Progressive Alliance, there were always people stepping up and coming in, and Matthew was bringing in a lot of people and was amazing the amount of energy. And I liked to see that part. And it was actually Victoria Shapinski that asked me to come to a meeting. She says, do you want to come to a meeting tonight? And I said yes, and that's how I became involved. And after we'd had some of our early activities that had amazing turnouts, we said we really need to focus. And we picked a couple of different projects. And the Community Solar was one. Ames Human Service Grant was another. And I said, I'll focus on my solar area, and that's kind of what I did. But there were a lot of other people doing Human Service Grant and other areas. And organic, I think, is the term. Amorphous is another one.
So can you tell us more about the solar project and the Human Services Grant for our listeners who may be very unfamiliar with that?
Sure. I can tell you a little, and I didn't come with all the figures, the dates in my mind. But when we started, I believe it was late 2015, we were talking about projects, and we had heard Don Haug speak to the electric department, the board actually, the commission, I think in November, about this idea. And there were a lot of people in the city council chambers listening to that. And there was just so much interest, and the board was interested. And so we said, that's it. We reached out to Don. We had a meeting. We talked about what our priorities could be, where we could start. One of the things he really wanted to see was a website. And so we have some really techie people. And we had folks that built a Facebook page and a website. And then we went out and we did a lot of tabling all over the place, a lot on the university campus and elsewhere, to talk with people about solar, and people signed up and said they were interested. At some point down the road, the city council, and this was 2016 of January, I believe, met and had a workshop about their priorities. And Matthew can talk about that more since he was on city council, but they do that in January of either every year or every other year.
Yeah.
Okay.
Every other year, usually, unless there's no change, and then sometimes it can be longer.
Okay. And out of, I believe it was the January 2016 workshop, came an initiative, a priority to have a community solar. And, you know, the background was that came from everything we had been doing with our talking with city council members, talking with the public, everything that Bob Haug had done. And so at that point, the city council adopted it. And then over the next couple of years, they fleshed it out. Today, I just pulled up this morning the information someplace that says, the city of Ames is selling what's called power packs, and the community solar array will be located on Airport Road on the north side, and they are selling what they call power packs, and people can become a part of the project by purchasing a power pack. The price has been set at $333 for a power pack. The energy that is generated by a person's power pack will come back to them as a credit on their monthly electric bill. So they have to be a person who is serviced by Ames Electric, not just an Ames resident, but a person serviced by the Ames Electric Department. The city set a goal of 80% before they build the array. They're now at 60.46%, so they've got about 20% to go. I haven't talked with the city recently, but I believe and hope that their intent is for that 20% to be picked up this spring and the array built this summer. There is a federal credit that defrays a lot of the costs, and that credit expires in December 31st of this year. So it's important that the array be built and be functional by the end of the year.
I have heard from the city that I think they're closer to 70% or 80% at this point, but I do know that a lot of those they plan to sell to, like, Iowa State and some other businesses. But if we can get more residents to buy power packs, that would be fantastic, because it is good for the environment, and it will be good for the city of Ames.
That is absolutely true. And there's a lot of different reasons that people invest in solar. A lot of people invest because they think it's important for the environment. And anybody who's been paying attention to anything recently has seen the reports that have come out from the federal government, from elsewhere, currently and for many years, that say that if we don't make some changes to mitigate what's happening, they're basically a world of hurt. So helping the environment is important, and this is one little way that we can do it. I personally think that for Ames to step into this solar arena, this is a first step. There is so much more that can happen. Some people have chosen to do it as a solar array on their own house, which is great, but there are drawbacks to this. The community solar is available to anybody, whether or not they own a house, live in a house. They can live in an apartment as long as they use electric. So it is widely available. It is also $333. A power pack is a lot of money, but it is a fraction of what it costs to put a solar array on a home. So it's very, very available. I want to mention, too, that I was just reading the paper this morning. I was drinking coffee, and there was a great article in the Des Moines Register by the mayor of Dubuque, who is a member of the Mayors for Solar Energy Coalition. And he was talking about Dubuque's goal of reducing greenhouse gas emissions by 50% by 2030, and the basis would be the 2003. And it's a great goal. I am impressed that Dubuque is doing that, and I'm hoping that the community solar array in Ames will be a first step towards something like that happening here, too.
It's also important to note that with the solar, I believe, I understand that you can actually use, you can buy solar packs, and then when you sell your house, the solar packs go with the house, so you can use it as a way to, you know, advertise that, hey, we have this for this house, and so that's a good way to advertise for the sale as well. Well, that's great, Betty. Do you want to talk more about you and Matthew, maybe the Human Services Grant and how that all evolved with APA's involvement?
Sure. Yeah, and I want to make one comment on solar. That was a lot of work. Betty was, I would say, the head of the APA angle. But, of course, we're supporting the Ames Community Solar was what the
initiative.
We are supporting them. The idea is that APA had some political know-how and had some relationships. Mm-hmm. Let's see if we can bring this good idea, leverage those relationships, and see if we can create an outcome that's positive. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. we did. But I think the other thing that's important there is that parallel to that work, Bronwyn Beattie Hansen ran for council for the first time. Mm-hmm. I stepped down, endorsed Bronwyn. She'd been a member of the Ames Progressive Alliance. And Chad and I know her forever ago. But I think what was really cool is she is the core reason at that goal setting that that piece was added. And so mm-hmm. council's goals are debated and decided upon at goal setting by council members. And if there are no good – I shouldn't say good. If there are no folks who hold your values, share your values – there's probably a lot of good people who don't share my values. They just have the wrong values. but if they're not there to say that, then they're just going to talk about, you know, parks, roads, the things that we always talk about that are important. But they're not going to shape your community in positive ways. It's going to get you excited about your community. That's not going to happen. So when Brahma got elected, she's the reason we got that in the goal setting. And I'm sure it was a euphemistic baby language like, we'll consider exploring maybe one day solar is probably how it got added, but it got added. It got added.
And I want to add on that. I wasn't actually going to say that because I wasn't going to out Bronwyn on this. But one of the advantages of APA is that as we were talking with Bob Haug and working with the initiative and so on, I kept talking with Matthew and saying, Matthew, what do you think? And so Matthew is giving me credit, but he was really talking about things we could do. And we met a lot with Steve Shanker over the years and so on. But anyway, he told me about this goal-setting session. I didn't even know it existed. I know Bob had talked with Bronwyn. I made a point of talking with Bronwyn about asking her specifically to bring it up at the workshop. You probably have did the same thing. And as a result of that, that actually was a strategic step that made a difference. Otherwise, we probably would have continued to be out there saying, please do this. And APA was able to bring that knowledge and bring a very strategic action to it. And that was the benefit of the organization partially, I think.
Yeah, that's fun to do those things.
Mm-hmm. That's great.
The grant program. Human
yes.
Services grant program.
Well, before we do that, I think we need to take a station break and say you're listening to 89.1 KHOY Community Radio, and this is Local Talk with a monthly APA segment.
And we could come back to it if you want to talk more about current. I don't know how much time we have.
We have another probably 10 minutes. So we have 10 minutes. Okay. So briefly talk. Okay. I mean, we have plenty of time in that. I believe in that aspect.
Okay.
So go ahead.
My name is Matthew Goodman. I'm going to talk about the community grant program. Okay. So I'll try to make this as accessible as possible, but it's, again, wonky because it's complicated. Everything's complicated. The simplest way to think about this is we all pay local option sales tax. To do that, they passed a referendum a long time ago when I was younger than now. That would be the case for almost all the human beings listening. And during that time, it was the referendum stated that the money would be used for community betterment, human services, and the arts. And actually, I think the order was human services, the arts, and community betterment. But community betterment is very vague, right? So they sold this referendum with the specifics being arts and human services, and then this community betterment catch-all, which led to, over time, money being utilized for things that weren't human services or the arts, but like seal coating the fire station, which I would consider as direct property tax action, has been paid for with local option sales tax, which I don't believe is the intent of that referendum nor appropriate. And more than that, it's just more appropriate. That's a property tax fee, right? But so we saw this happen, and what's happening is we're building up a big amount of money, over $2 million, when there's still needs in the community in the terms of the human services and the arts. We're building up this large surplus, and the reason we couldn't use it oftentimes was given that we can't increase their operating funding because all human services organizations in the city of Ames, they only apply generally, historically, for operations money. And it's through this thing called the asset process, okay? That's it. It's just a big group of people, including the university adds money, the Story County adds money, United Way adds money, and we add money. And so we all call our money, and then people come forward with an increase in budget that's operations. And the fear was if we give too much to operations, that will carry every year. So if you give an increase of $70,000 this year to operations, you're going to have to always make it up every year or you're going to have a decrease. So they said the city management always said, we want to use this money. We want to go up slowly in operations and we'll use this other money for community betterment in terms of one-time capital improvements. And the argument was these one-time capital improvements won't create a long-term obligation. They'll just be the slurry seal coating at the fire station or painting the jail in the basement at the city hall. Those things are one-time capital improvements, even though that money is probably should be property tax. So what we decided to do was lobby council and the city management to create a capital improvements program that would work for human services. So now the argument couldn't always be made, ACPC would like to increase their budget this year $120,000. No, that's too much. That's too large. Okay. They're going to increase their budget 4%, which is maybe $10,000, but they are going to do this new HVAC project, which is going to be a $70,000 project. That question would go through this different area. And what that – the result of that, and it's still – even though it's like 5 years ago, it feels like the result that it's still in its infancy. We're only in our second year of funding through this process, but it had a great year last year, and there were a lot of arguments made at council, like it won't get utilized, it won't be effective, but somehow we got it passed, and now that money that was originally intended to be utilized to help people is getting utilized to help people.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
That's really good that APA was able to help that with that process. Chad, I'm going to talk to you a little bit. You're one of the more recent members of APA. I think you joined in last year. Do you want to talk more about your involvement and what made you want to join?
So, to repeat what both Betty and Matthew have said about being involved and wanting to do something for the community. I think kind of pushed and bullied my way into, I would contact Matthew and say, how can I be more involved? What can I do? And so he pushed me to APA, which, it's an organization that I'm looking down at my mug down here that says community happens here. And I think community isn't just a group of people who are in the same area or in the same city. It's people who are trying to collectively do a thing together. And I think that's what APA does. It's, we're the voice, we're the voice of people who don't have a voice for themselves, and they want to do a thing, something that involves the whole community and helps the betterment of the people around them. And we are the driving force to help them get that thing accomplished. Mm-hmm. So that's how I got involved. And it's fun being a part of this group, and we're doing a lot of cool things, and I think it's really fun.
That's awesome. I know that one of the things that will be coming out for us here soon is that we'll be trying to educate people about the city's comprehensive plan. The city is going to be developing a new comprehensive plan, and that hasn't been done in how many years now? Probably 20? Since 2003? Oh, 1997, actually. Yes, yes, that's what. 1997 was the last time we had a comprehensive plan. And basically, that just kind of guides the city.
Just to be clear, there was a review done in 2003.
Yeah, so that guides
the city.
Betty's
right. The original plan was in 97. She's right.
I just read it this morning.
Sure. So part of this process for the plan guides the city and what some of our goals will be for the future. And it's really important that our citizens be involved with that. So do you have any ideas, Chad, on how APA can help educate people about the comprehensive plan?
I mean, definitely to just pay attention to city council meetings. I think that helps. I know city council meetings sounds like a very boring thing to a lot of people, but there's ways to be involved. You can on Facebook, you can just watch the meetings. You don't have to actually attend, but it's also right in downtown Ames, so it's easy to attend them, and they're usually hour and a half, 2 hours long. So staying involved and paying attention to the things that are going on in your community, I think, is important.
Yeah, and I know that the city is planning to have some actual, like, meetings where people can attend and talk about what some of the goals or things that they find important in Ames, or what future they would like to see in Ames. So we'll be definitely looking, we'll be advertising some of those meetings so people can make sure that if they can attend, they can come and give their opinion, because we find that to be really important.
I know that you're getting close to wrapping up.
Yes.
And as Chad mentioned community, it took me back to the beginning. And as I said, I wasn't involved in the very beginning of it. But I do know that Ann Kinzel, Victoria Shapinski, and Matthew all had a vision about community. And Victoria's vision of community and the importance and the ability to impact the community is what drew me into it. And I think it's important to take it back to that very beginning and thank the people who had that vision to bring this forward and still provide that platform for people to continue to move forward. That's my last 2 cents.
Oh, yes, that's great. So we want to thank KHOI for helping us build a progressive future here in Ames, and for continuing to let APA show our progressive voice on the air here. And this is Local Talk. Keep up with any APA items on our Facebook page or amesprogressive.org. And you can also email us at amesprogressivealliance@gmail.com if you have some ideas or things that you want us to try to help you do in the community. We are always open for ideas.
Thanks for being here. We've been talking with folks from the Ames Progressive Alliance, Carolyn Myers, Betty Baird, Matthew Goodman, and Chad Watkins. I'm impressed in listening to you that you've only been in existence since 2015. I thought that you had, you know, decades back. But you've really become an integral part of what's going on here in really just 3 years then. And that's impressive to hear all that you've accomplished in that time. KHOI and APA make a good team. They're both community assets. And so it was interesting to hear about the current and the historic efforts that you've been making. And this is KHOI, and you've been listening to Local Talk. I've been your host, Gail Seiler. Local Talk is broadcast on KHOI at 7 a.m., noon, and 7 p.m. on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. You can also listen to today's Local Talk show and all of our past Local Talk shows online at our website, khoifm.org. Local Talk was engineered by Aladdin Al-Kathiri. Our theme song is Backtracking by Al Harris and Tom Richards from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. Other music that you heard was the Kwanzaa song by Lovely Hoffman. Thanks to the other voices we heard on today's show, Dennis Hart with the news and Samantha Hoffman's interview with her grandmother. Remember, your participation as audience and supporter is what makes KHOI possible and meaningful. Thank you for listening, and see you again on the radio.
KHOI is funded in part by the Ames Chamber of Commerce. We encourage you to shop local this holiday season. You can support Ames' growth while enjoying a wide array of local shopping and dining experiences that Ames independent businesses have to offer. From the Ames Chamber of Commerce, happy holidays. Let's shop local and grow Ames.